Welcome to the Drive Phase Podcast, the best podcast for information on issues surrounding sports business in the Caribbean. On the Drive Phase, we have discussions with sport administrators, coaches, athletes, and various stakeholders in the sporting industry and examine their contribution to sports and entrepreneurship. Here's your host, Dalton Myers.
So in this episode, we look at WIPA, the West Indies Players Association, partnership in developing the professional cricketer. And here to discuss it with me is Wavell Hines, president of the West Indies Players Association. Wavell, welcome.
Thanks, man. Good evening.
So listen, you have played cricket for many years for West Indies, national level, club level. And how is the transition now into administration?
Well, it has been good. It's something that started from, I was actually in the middle of my playing days. Maybe I should have started a little bit earlier from the day I started my cricket career. I should have started to plan the transition to the next phase. But I learned in the first phase of my playing career that you need to start to plan for thereafter. And I did just that. So it has been good. It's a major adjustment to come back in 9-5. I was told by Gus Logie in 1995 when I was on a tour of Pakistan that playing cricket at that level, it was a youth level, although it was international, it was youth against Pakistan under 19. He said that we are living in a fantasy world. So I couldn't understand because I was just playing cricket. So, well, you stay in a hotel and you get transported to and from the game, to and from the airport and all that. And when normal, regular people go to work, they do all of that for themselves and then take themselves to work. So living in a hotel, bed being made up, you go down to the lobby here for breakfast. Breakfast is made, and when you transition now, fast forward to where I'm at now, is allocating the 24 hours of the day to do all of those stuff, plus preparing to be able to do work and family stuff. So yeah, it's a big transition.
You talk about family. So you're a daddy, you're a WIPA president, big part of Camperdown, past student association, you're an active member. Now your constituency caretaker, you've been doing quite a lot. How you manage that time in terms of just creating a balance?
It's important. I mean, managing time is something that I was forced to do from when I was young by my dad. So while playing cricket at school throughout my entire life at Camperdown and playing football at the same time.
Right.
So I was always active throughout the school year. I was always told to make sure that I have done house chores. I had to go and spend holidays with grandmas and look for cousins and aunties. So played for my community, Portsmouth in Portmore. And that's where my cricketing skills really got developed. Then playing for Kensington. So I was always very busy doing multiple things from when I was maybe about 10 years old. So sometimes when I don't have anything to do, I don't know what to do myself. So I just sort of just interchange the ones that I transitioned out of. I find something else to fill the gap. And of course, the most important of all is being a dad. So that is special.
Talk about Portsmouth in Portmore, and you have talked many times that your dad has always been a crucial part as a coach for you and now a coach for Alex and Corey. How crucial is that kind of a family bonding for you now and even moving forward?
Well, it is the very bedrock of what has made me. I think if God has made a greater man than my dad, then I want to meet him. He's a superhuman being. And my father, when he first started to be a dad to me, and I started to understand that daddy is actually being daddy, I never used to like daddy. I used to think daddy is hard because then mommy allows you to, you know, mommy may be hard sometimes, but mommy will, in the middle of that, allow you to do what you want to do or come and, you know, pat you on the back and get you back around to doing stuff. But daddy was always regiment about timekeeping, doing chores at home, going to church, just all the regular things, making sure that you do your schoolwork, showing respect to family members, being a big brother, which I was at the time, and just trying to make sure that stuff are done in a particular order that is repeatable and sustainable. And he was always consistent with that. He was someone who left school at grade 9, walked with all age school, and had to go and learn a trade, which is masonry construction. And he insisted, and he always said that everyone in the house must leave each morning to go to work or school. Nobody will stay unless you're sick or you're retired. And himself and mommy was not retired, and we had to leave, rain or shine. You had to come out the house and you had to go to school. And it's not asking, it's telling that you must go to school. And then, interestingly, I found out maybe in about third form, not knowing that my father used to come and check up on me at Camperdown ever so often, because he didn't come to parent teachers meeting, or he didn't go to the report day when you have parents day and thing.
Yeah.
He comes like 3-4 times per term. When I was in a class, he would have been checking up on me with teachers, and I didn't know, and he would have asked you random questions at different times. And youngster, you're giving the answer that you think is most suitable, not knowing that he has the right answer. He's just asking for confirmation. Yeah. And you found out the hard way sometimes when the reports are due and then it's read to you and all that. So those sort of techniques and style I have adapted, I've learned from them. I got sometimes a sticky end when my father did it, but I learned the lessons to monitoring and making sure that the right things are done at all times. And my father is of the belief that first things first. So you look after the first things first. You get home from school, you get your beard, you get your homework done, and then you can leisure and laze around, but not leisure before and then.
Yeah.
No. And he's the most important thing to my father is that I always knew that I could count on him. So he gave me that security. So I believe in my father up to today. I can call him for an advice because, as you know, people transition. So he's a different sort of father than he'll be doing to me now than he did 30 years ago. So I have learned, and that's the first person I've probably learned from, in how to be a man and how to be a father.
Weaver, we're going to be talking a little bit more about the professional cricketer now, but I wanted to bring in this point. You're one of the few athletes, and I say a professional athlete, who have managed to go on to even garner a master's, an MSc, of a BN, an MSc, I think it is. Why is education so important to you?
Well, I just gave it a background. I was told that it is important. I was instructed, directed, and supported to go to school. After spending 5 years at Independence City College, I passed common entrance to go to Camperdown. And what was interesting to me about school was that it was the best part of my life. I had a social life. I had a sporting life. My finances were better when I was going to school. I get lunch money and I get friends at school. So everything about my life, I get to go to devotions in the morning. So I wasn't missing out anything. And my social circles grew bigger. My sporting circle grew bigger, playing football and cricket. And I got a chance to leave home because I had to travel from Portmore to Camperdown. So that alone allowed me to love school. And then you go to school, you do your work. I mean, you do your schoolwork, you got rewarded in different ways. And I knew that my father, and of course my mummy, went to Oberlin High School and had to stop at grade 9 because her parents could not afford to send her any longer because she had older siblings who had to be finished. Mm-hmm. And you know, in those days, the family is big and the first two or three may get through and they will have to take the responsibility of sending the others through. So those are, having parents who finished school at grade 9 and they were insistent that it is important to have education, and I got the support from them and I had reasons to go through, you know, going through school. Sports actually helped me through school in getting a Michael Money scholarship in 1994 for 3 years, which finished sending me through high school, buying cricket equipment, because that's what it was for, performing in cricket and in academics at the same time. Michael Money had a trust fund for two guys from the rural, two guys from the urban.
Right.
And I was the first winner of the first 3 years.
That's pretty interesting, man. So you won that, and later you were the 2013 recipient of the Courtney Walsh Awards at that ceremony at the Pegasus Hotel in Jamaica. So you've been rewarded for the great work you've been doing.
Well, yeah, I think as I look at it, Dalton, I try to give back a lot. I am very grateful for the opportunities I've received. I spoke about the Michael Manley Trust Fund that I gained thanks to the late, great Michael Manley and all the persons who supported that program. I am a beneficiary of a very strong family unit. That's a very strong community in Portsmouth, a very strong high school in Camperdown. Many blessings to Mrs. Cynthia Cook, my former mother, head. A former principal at Camperdown, and still my mother. Mrs. Shirley Simmons, vice principal at the time, and there were opposite numbers. Mrs. Cook was the person who gave you the tough love, and Mrs. Simmons was the one who hugged you and got you to do everything you didn't want to do without even raising her voice. And she did it with a smile, and when you saw her, you said, all right, miss, no problem.
You're gonna do it.
Yes. So, and when I had the benefit of that, I had the benefit of being with Kensington Cricket Club, which I'm still with now. I'm the second VP and captain in the Junior Cup team, so when I leave here after Junior Cup practice. And of course, I had the benefit of being playing youth cricket, so representing the Jamaica Cricket Association. Being in that setup exposed me and of course playing under 19 cricket for the West Indies. So from having those benefits and experiences, I think I owe a great depth of gratitude to cricket, the game. And as such, you'll see that I'm still involved at various levels. I'm the ambassador for the Portmore League. I still play for Portsmouth in cricket, Portmore competition when it's on. I play for Kensington, serving a Weeper, president and CEO. And just to note to the public, the president's side of it is quite voluntary. So, and I've been an executive of Weeper from 2002, so I'm in my 17th year serving. So from when I was playing, I was sacrificing playing days and staying up at night reading material to represent players and all that. So, and I understand the value in it, and I understand what advocacy can do, good advocacy for the right reason, when you give of yourself and give selflessly for a greater cause. Because when I studied Weeper, it started in 1973 on a boat with those guys, and somebody gave up what they had to give up at that time. I'm sure less was at stake, and they gave up the little that was at stake to make sure that we can sit here today championing medical health insurance of $4 million per year per player. And that's a far cry from 46 years ago. So I those are the motivations that carry me through. And you spoke earlier about a young man, Ravman Powell, who's been part of the West Indies setup, unfortunately didn't make the team. But when I managed to occupy the position of chairman of selector for Jamaica under 19 in 2011, and also manager of the team, we traveled to Guyana. That was Ravman's first flight on an aircraft, and I sat with him, and he gave me a story about his humble beginnings and his struggles. And he played in that tournament, didn't play the 3-day competition, and he was quite upset. I had to speak to him. Played one day, did well, and I, from fast forward to 2019, Ravman is one of the better players going around. So those sort of contribution, I want to believe, will have impacted people. So it not only impacted Ravman socially and economically, but it also impacted Jamaica and the West Indies. So Ravman is now a top cricketer, an elite cricketer, earning top dollar in US dollars, and it generates revenue to the country, bringing new revenue into our country. It motivates a young size in his community. The socioeconomic impact is sometimes immeasurable, and we need to be mindful of that. And the social intervention that sports cause, sports to me, is one of the greatest social engineering tools that we can use to alleviate a lot of stress, especially in a developing third world country like Jamaica. Yeah.
You mentioned quite a number of things just now, and obviously, starting out in 2002, this is now your fourth official term as president of WIPO. You had served at a point as interim president. What can you say have been some of your biggest achievements in developing cricketers in the region?
Some of the biggest achievements, and you have kind of to say what I would say would have been my biggest achievement. What would be the biggest achievement on the administration that I have led?
Fair enough.
Would be creating a professional setup in regional cricket from 2014 to date. Of course, that started with some hiccups and problems. We won't shy away from those.
Namely the Indian Tour.
Yes, and those may be the stuff that we needed to face. And there are some uncomfortable truths in cricket that some persons want to speak about, some will cast blame, and I've never wanted to cast blame, not to run away from what is the truth and what you need to do. We have just signed earlier this year, last year, medical insurance for regional contracted players, as I spoke to one already earlier, where an international contracted player has a medical insurance that covers him to $4 million US per year per player.
Okay. And which is crucial for athletes.
And if regional guy, I think, is about $2 million per year, US dollars we're speaking.
Right.
And you only come off the help plan if you're no longer a regional player. Meaning the Cricket West Indies and Weeper will no longer pay your premium, but you will remain on the plan if you can take up that slot off yourself, for yourself. You also have the opportunity of adding your dependents on it. Your family members can be added at your expense. So those are the opportunities that are created. And the greater the pool is, the more affordable it becomes for Cricket West Indies and Weeper. So we are very mindful of those things. Those are critical things that we have implemented. We have spoke about selection policies, creating an amnesty with Cricket West Indies to try and broaden the scale. We try and do our policies irrespective if players are members of Weeper or not, because player issues sometimes goes right across the board. And we implemented that about 2 years ago at Cricket West Indies, allowing players who are not necessarily playing regularly in regional cricket but are still actively playing at good standards around the world to be eligible to play cricket. Mark, you faced with a technical committee, will give a final word on their availability once they would have met a lower grade criteria. Also, to try and make sure that the relationship with Cricket West Indies and WIPA remain one that sets out to the public, and not everybody is well informed and knows, but WIPA is a special member of Cricket West Indies. So in Cricket West Indies, organizational chart, you'll see WIPA, the academia, the commercial arm of the Caribbean, the media arm of the Caribbean being special members, and WIPA is one. So we want to create that relationship, and we have met with senior persons who are advocates for workers and labor laws and labor work, and we have understood that in trying to get the best for the players, fighting publicly does not necessarily add value to what you're doing or endears anybody to want to be at the table with you. So we, as an executive at the time, reviewed our position and sought to operate on goodwill with Cricket West Indies, and they were pretty much good with that, and it has been good going so far. We have had fights. We had a negotiation at our offices with Cricket West Indies, because that's ongoing for the renewal of MOU going from 2019 to 2023.
Right, so I was just going to jump in and say the collective bargaining agreement expires this year.
Yes.
So the new one
is being put together.
I didn't have this done, but do you anticipate many challenges since you don't have a new president for Cricket West Indies? There's a new collective bargaining agreement now. Do you anticipate challenges in getting this one done?
No, I like to anticipate opportunities to see how best we can move it forward. I want to always assume that persons will operate in good faith. As I have done publicly and I've done personally, want to encourage and wish Cricket West Indies new president all the best, Mr. Ricky Skerritt, who is no stranger to me. He was my manager when I played for West Indies between 2000 and 2003. Mm-hmm. So we have that sort of background and relationship. As I said in previous engagements, while I speak a lot to Cricket West Indies president of the past, immediate past president, if I spoke to him twice for the week, I would have spoken to Johnny Grave 5 times and Jimmy Adams 7 times. Because those are the persons who are the paid executive officers who execute the policies of the board. So I have reasons to interact with them quite often. So we are charting a way forward. We have our own view as to how we go forward. Cricket West Indies will have theirs. I am very mindful that there is a new leadership and they may have their own style that we are appreciative of. But there is also a lot of history as to what we go forward with and how we go forward. Mm-hmm. And we want to believe that when we do our internal survey in terms of player satisfaction, which we'll do, we have a strategic plan that we compiled last January. Laughing Inc., it's Miss Margaret O'Rain, which charts our way for strategic plan that starts our way from 2018 to 2023. And we have programs set out in the player development programs, so we transition. So we have a strategic plan that we work with, and we have regular reviews of it to make sure that we are on the right path and make the adjustments. A strategic plan is not necessarily cast in stone. It can be adjusted according to what's happening on the day.
You mentioned something, the player development, and you've been actively trying to push that for players across the region. What are some of the initiatives that WIPA has been doing under that player development plan? And the second part to that is, I know there is a community development program for youngsters that you are now implementing in Jamaica that have been in Trinidad before. Talk to us about those two a bit more.
All right. So the player development is really, as you started with, about how do you transition and how I would have made that transition as a player. Is really, as you become a member of WIPA, we want to make sure that we get you as soon as you become 18 and become a professional cricketer, that you start to plan your career after cricket. And your career after cricket may still be in cricket, but your career after playing cricket. And so that program, we start with a cluster of managers. So we have player development managers. We put a cluster of players to that manager, and that manager will oversee them. And you'll go one-on-one to say, what do you like at this stage in your life? What do you think you'll be in 12 years' time, 15 years' time? And whatever that may be, we'll start to chart the way for you. Actively chart the way for you, and where we can financially support it, we support it. Where we can open doors to access different opportunities for you, we do that. And it's called career transition. So we're trying to transition. So you want to move from being a player to an umpire. You want to move from being a player to a coach. You want to move from being a player to the best plumber. You want to meet to be the electrician. You want to be an accountant, a doctor, a nurse. Your choice. It's your career. We will access it. So we have gone out as well to have MOUs with UE Open Campus, GC Foster College, Dominica State College, St. Vincent Community College, Quality Academies in Jamaica, because we want to make sure that we can touch the academic side at different levels, because everybody's at a different level, that learning continuum, and we have an appreciation for that and a respect for that. All these are private and sensitive information, and not everybody is very much open to what their level of education is and their level of development is and how they want to go forward. So we have those sort of relationships and those policies and programs actively happening now. We have David Bernard Jr., who finished his degree, and we helped him. We have the Knight Sisters from Barbados, who play for the West Indies, are actively doing courses in Barbados, and a couple of other guys who are supporting and have on the program going forward. As you spoke about my achievements at the master's level, and I went into the program for symbolism for the most part. So I am promoting this program. I went in the program to show them that I am leading the program and I am going to do it as busy as I am. I went to UE Open Campus, made a sacrifice, and came out successful. I made sure I paid for it, so I didn't want to access the resources of depriving my young stuff and paying. But I was a part of the program, just that I made sure I paid for it. I did that. And I said that to say, in the list of things that I have benefited from you getting a scholarship from you, from your good self, Sir Myers, sitting across from me when I was, when I retired from first class cricket in 2011, I saw an article where you were saying that you're going to be offering scholarships to cricketers and things. So maybe if it didn't open your mouth, I would probably wouldn't have been there. And I read that while I was in Guyana, the same tour with Ravman for the under 19 team, as manager of the Jamaican under 19 team. And I started UE at Karamak Mona campus September 2011. Started out as part time, as you will know. Did first year of scholarship, couldn't do everything that was required for me, and approached it to say that I think it's best to offer a youngster the contract, the scholarship, and I would be able to pay for it. But the greatest thing that I got an opportunity to be enrolled in university, and I made the most of it. So I think it is important for persons to think about their continuous development and that way. And what we want to create at WIPO, we've discussed it, and it's in our strategic plan, is to create a development curve or a development slope that shows a youngster entering kiddie cricket, and is he seen a Shandapala, Chris Gayle, Jason Holder, whomever the star is that he admires, as a youngster being in prep or primary school, enters cricket, and he can show his full life from the day he became a fan and start to participate at the grassroots level to the day that he depart this earth, where we want to even at the back end of your career, you become a part of the Retired Players Foundation, and you have some stake in it, you have shares in it. And we work out something with a family member to say that 50% shares goes to you when you depart the land and your family estate, and 50% stay with the foundation. So if your parents are somebody transition at the age of 80, say from they are 80 years old to they are 80, they are in the cricket and they can show a different state. 80, participate in primary prep under 19, then into professional, that is will be the peak. Then you transition out into retired players, where you come and play golf tournaments, charity games. You do a promotion, I do TV commentary, radio, and you become a coach. Then you move down the ladder where you're just in that ambassador role because you're a little bit older now and more seen and have more statesman duties to do. So we want to have a cricketer going, so a family member can say, in all of that is university degree, all of those things, going to college, personal training and development. So the cricket can see as a life, you can see a cricketer, and cricket can be a lifetime thing, and not just try and be the best you can be to play, and then when you finish playing, then we are passing around hats to help you if you are falling on hard times.
Yeah. So let me just ask then, in this new dispensation, how crucial is this development for players who are now in T20 and who are earning a lot more than cricketers used to earn?
Well, it is important to know. It is even more important now, because guess what? When your earning power gets greater, your expenses sometimes follow. And your lifestyle will dictate how you maintain that. But what is not told to a lot of youngsters, while we are happy that they earn a lot of money and they should earn more, is that it is not your earning power doesn't follow your age. So it has a shelf life as well. And yeah. Even you may be earning at 8 years old, it will more often than not, it will not consistently follow what you're earning at the peak of your career. And those are the uncomfortable truths that are not told to youngsters, and you need to tell them that there is a point in your life when you maximize your earning, and there's a point where you maintain and it trickles down, and that's why we have pension schemes and provident fund and all those things. No, we want to create more of that. We have seen where a lot of guys have fallen on hard times, or we have to rally around them and try and get stuff, and that is well and good, we should, but how do we minimize and mitigate against those sort of things happening as often as they are happening now? How do we give a guy a good lifestyle, a good quality of life after he has retired playing? What information do we share with him? What systems and structures do we put in place? And that's why I speak to the Career Transition, Retired Players Foundation that we have with Cricket West Indies, and making sure that when a player finishes playing, all the credit and all the attributes that he would have had from playing, and all his credentials and all the power that he has, public power, the marketing ability that he has, can transition into the Retired Players Foundation, and he's been used in a different way to build that, build himself. He gets a sort of a pension from that the other sports in America does, where people have pensions are guaranteed for the rest of their lives. So those are the things that we are trying to set up to transition people.
Let me just ask you then, in kind of wrapping up, well, my favorite female cricketer, Marissa Aguilera, former captain, has retired after probably about 112 ODIs, quite a number of T20s. What kind of player do you think is Marissa? And for players like those, what role do they have in developing youngsters in the region?
Well, firstly, I want to take the opportunity to tell her thanks for her service. I did so personally by telephone. When I heard, I called her, so I spoke to her for a good time about it. WEPA sent out a release to our membership and to the public, telling her thanks. Marissa's service to the West Indies is without doubt a great one. She was one or a leader for a long time. She was replaced by Stephanie. She remained a vice captain, and she didn't serve any less when she was a leader. Her contribution as a wicketkeeper is great. She had done a lot of work, good work in front and behind the stumps. She has played for a long time.
Yeah.
And I mean, West Indies and Trinidad and Tobago has benefited from that. And what I have said in my release, and I will say it now, she is a gem of a human being. And I think ultimately we all want to make sure that whatever we do, we're at the end of the day, we remain true to ourselves. We are endearing and respectful to all. And I think Marissa managed to do all of that with all the back and forth in cricket and cricket politics and not being selected and the criticism of captain and losing. She has remained true to herself, and she has been a great diplomat and a good representative of the West Indies. I want to tell her thanks. And she has a great role. I think I've had early discussions with Jimmy Adams, the director of cricket at Cricket West Indies, about how she can be used to motivate young, especially young ladies in the Caribbean, to want to be a part of it, and how she can actively stay in the system and contribute. She's got a wealth of knowledge. I'm sure that she'll want to probably certify herself in whichever year she wants to, year she wishes to, and I spoke to her about that. But I asked her that she, in our busy schedule, find time to make a contribution to empty that knowledge tank that she have with youngsters around, so that we can continue to grow and move forward. So thanks again to Marissa.
My final question to you, Wavell, in moving forward, looking ahead, certainly for WEPA, what advice would you have for young cricketers? Well, certainly a young Alex, a young Corey, younger ones who are out there. What advice would you have for them in terms of cricket in the region, and what should they try to do to make it at the top level?
Well, cricket, I would say to the youngsters that cricket is a very good option. It is an option that, especially in Jamaica, it gives you the chance to continue to play cricket and study. I'm sure a lot of parents are going to be interested in what's happening with their education and development of their children. And just to remain disciplined, the returns on investment when it relates to the economic side of it is quite great. You get an opportunity, as I did as a youngster, to know the world for free. And I use my bat to know the world for free. I've been around the world about 5,000 times for free. And you get paid to do what you used to do on the street with a coconut bar, a piece of board, and a zinc pan. Your friends, you do it at an elite level, and you get paid. Get per diem. You stay in 5-star hotel with duvets, and you fly business class. You meet the queens and the kings of the world. You shake the prime minister's hands. You just live a very good quality of life. That in itself is not always a long-term reality. It can be a fairy tale life, but enjoy it and use that as a catalyst to set up yourself going forward. So, as I said earlier, we want to make sure that we capture the kids from it. We take them right up to when they are retired, that they can be a part of it. And cricket is what, that is how we are shaping the game to be now. And I want to encourage youngsters to play the game, be humble, be endearing, be friendly, and try and make sure that you give back. And giving back to your club, your school, your society is probably one of the most fulfilling things we can do as a human being.
I know I said it last time, but still not time yet. We have another ball to go in the over. You're now going into representational politics. Is it that we're going to see Wavell out of Weeper as president and CEO, one? Or if not, will we see a split again between the president and the CEO in terms of personnel at Weeper?
Well, that's a question that you have asked me, but that's not a decision for me in its entirety. I am certainly going to be in a representational politics. What I would say is that the bylaws of Weeper allows me to do so, as I wouldn't have bring the organization into disrepute if it wasn't possible. So I've got the all clear from the executive, and I am not treading on any lines that I shouldn't tread on. But in terms of the splitting office and all those things, that's entirely up to the executive and the membership of Weeper. That is not a decision for me. I hold the position. I don't dictate how it goes. I am the holder of the position for now.
You're the holder of the position for now.
For now, as we speak. And I am grateful to be, and humble and honored to be, but I do not dictate how it goes forward, because in one breath I am an employee and in another breath I am an administrator.
Which is an interesting one. I will bring you back at some point to talk about that difference, etc. But Wavell, we really appreciate it. Thank you very much, my brother, and thanks for being here. And I'm sure we'll have a part two of this. And to all of our listeners, thanks for joining us this week on The Drive Phase. Make sure to visit our section on iTunes. Subscribe to the show in iTunes, and so you'll never miss an episode. Remember, we'd appreciate our ratings in iTunes also. Go tell a friend about the show so that they too can spread the word. Feel free to send feedback, comments, or questions about this or any other episode to thedrivephase@gmail.com, or look us up on Twitter and Facebook at @thedrivephaseja. Until next time, see you then.